coming up on New York Now.
You lost 3 congressional seats. You have virtually no money. I mean, where do you start? What do you do first?
I guess this is what rock bottom looks like, isn't it?
An interview with the new head of the state Republican Party.
Finding more female candidates is a number one priority of ours. As I outlined when I got elected chairman, I said we're going to partner with Lee Stefanik and go find as many female candidates to run for public office right on down to town and, you know, city and village levels.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for joining us here on PBS. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, is off this week. The grand old party here in New York is coming off a rough 2018 that saw them lose control of the state Senate, as well as a number of key congressional seats. This, of course, in addition to the fact that a Republican hasn't won a statewide office since 2002. Earlier this summer, there was a change in leadership as longtime chairman Ed Cox was officially replaced by Nick Langworthy. Our Karen DeWitt sat down with the Western New Yorker this week to discuss the party's plan heading into an important 2020 election year.
Nick Langworthy, thanks for joining us on New York Now.
Thanks for having me.
So you're taking over the Republican Party of New York State at a time of retrenchment. Republicans last year lost their only last statewide bastion, the state Senate. There's only 22 Republicans to 40 Democrats now. You lost 3 congressional seats. You have virtually no money. I mean, where do you start? What do you do first?
I guess this is what rock bottom looks like, isn't it? There's nowhere to go but up. And, you know, I think the most recent Siena poll that came out a couple weeks ago talked about how New Yorkers want balance in their government. And you have over 60% of people that said that they prefer it to have, you know, at least one house of the legislature, one arm of our government to be in Republican hands. I think you're going to see a pendulum swing. My job is to get it going in that direction. And I think with a new energy and a new direction and a more aggressive form of messaging, we're going to do that.
So what is your strategy going forward?
Well, I mean, I traveled all over the state to run for the chairmanship and had a lot of conversations and listened to our party leaders. And, you know, those are really reflective moments after a time of great loss. I mean, it's finding the opportunity in the loss is, I think, what's really necessary. We have to get back to basics. And I think, you know, many people looked at that Senate majority and activists within the party. I don't think we quite knew how good we had it by having, even though we're such a blue state, down 3 million votes in enrollment, mm-hmm. that we had Republicans controlling one house of the legislature. Many would complain, you know, they didn't drive the agenda. They didn't get a legislative agenda accomplished.
Yeah, they agreed to but a lot were, of Democratic issues.
Right, there was
too,
compromise.
Right, gun control and stuff like
there,
that.
There, yeah. There was compromise in certainly those, you know, to the decent right, we're pretty upset with a mm-hmm. lot of things. They didn't know how good we had it, though, because that was such a critical speed bump or a stop sign to so many bad policies that now are law. And now being down 40 to 22 in the Senate, it's a different world. And a lot of those IDC members that, you know, they weren't necessarily conservatives, but they would partner with Republicans.
That's the Independent Democratic Conference, the breakaway Democrats who would side with the
right.
Republicans and rule with them.
And now they're extinct.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been replaced by socialists, AOC wannabes. Now those, you know, in Washington, D.C., those policies aren't getting enacted because we have divided government. In Albany, they're reality. And I think the governor has buyer's remorse. If he was being honest with anyone, he would say, I liked it better the old way. Because this leftward leech, he knows that as you travel around the state, that's not the government people are looking for. I mean, they want, you know, people that are putting their own kitchen table issues forward. And that's not happening in Albany. I mean, we're reacting to every, you know, left-wing, you know, idea that comes, you know, down the pipe. We're creating solutions to problems that don't really exist in most people's worlds.
Well, that poll also showed that a lot of people agree with many of the things that the Democrats are doing. You think at some point, though, it's going to go too far and people are going to be tired of it?
Hey, free stuff polls really well. You know, a free lunch is always popular. But people that are of common sense, that are actually having to balance family budgets, that are actually having to pay the bills to fund this very expensive high-tax state, they understand that, you know, there is an end to what you can do with other people's money because you run out of it. And our out-migration of our population is the single greatest crisis that we face as New Yorkers. I mean, we are spending a fortune to educate our kids in excellent high schools, elementary schools, in a SUNY system that is world class. And then we send them to other states to start their lives. And how many grandparents have to sit on a Sunday night to have a relationship with their grandchildren over the phone? And that's wrong. And listen, as a unabashed upstater, it hits a little closer to home than probably maybe some of our friends that live downstate.
Yeah, because it's particularly an upstate phenomenon, right?
But it's a way of life in upstate New York. Families are divided, and we're not being served well by it. We can govern this state in a better way, and common sense must make a comeback if the state is to succeed. I don't think it's by accident that the two states in America that are projected to lose two seats in Congress are New York and California. States that are taxing less, governing less, providing more economic freedom, they're gaining seats in Congress because people are moving to those states.
You're a supporter of President Trump, right? You wanted him to run for governor back in 2013, you're an early supporter.
I've had a relationship with the president since 2014.
And what is he doing right, in your view?
I just look at the economy. I mean, it's absolutely on fire. We've got record low unemployment under every socioeconomic segment of our population. I mean, you know, the stock market and people's 401ks has soared. He's actually, you know, holding the world at task that other countries are actually starting to pay for things. It's not just America paying the bill for everybody else. I mean, the president's doing exactly what he said he was going to do when he ran for president. And I think that's what the media has such a hard time with. Someone that's actually following through and governing the way that they said they would.
But as you well know, his support in New York, it's pretty regional and it's pretty polarizing. Like, he has pockets of upstate, rural, small town, certain areas where they're very enthusiastic. But then you got New York City, where he's not popular, and the suburbs, where he's mixed. So how do you go forward with candidates in New York State where you've got to appeal to the Rockefeller Republicans, who still exist, because I know some of them, and some of them are viewers of this program, or even going back to like the Giuliani Republicans who supported a Republican mayor in New York City. Like, how do you appeal to them who may not necessarily be on board with the president?
I have no illusions that New York's about to enter the category of swing state. I don't think we'll have a great deal of electioneering going on here, but you know, there's multiple prisms that voters look at in every election, and we won the national election. We're down 3 million votes in enrollment. No Republican president is ever overly popular, given the disparity of our enrollment in the state. You know, which tends to really break down by more national trends. So George Bush wasn't exactly a boost to our electoral success in 2004. Mm-hmm. He lost the state handily. And again, I mean, if New York is in play in the presidential election, we're gonna have a 49 or 50 state sweep for President Trump. That's highly unlikely. So we go and look at where did President Trump perform very well in 2016? Mm-hmm. Well, some of those congressional seats that slipped away from us in 2018 were the seats that he actually, I believe, carried the candidates to victory, John Faso, Claudia Tenney, others, mm-hmm. that he won those seats, and his boost actually helped the congressional candidates get over the finish line. And then when they didn't have him at the top of the ticket, they slid. That also is in effect in certain state Senate seats.
Yeah, so the Senate races, as we discussed earlier, got odds against you, but what are the vulnerable areas where the Democrats are vulnerable? Do you think Long Island is?
I mean, look, I start with the premise that if we lost it in one election, we should be able to gain it back in one election. Now, there's a lot of hills between here and there, but any seat that we lost needs to be examined greatly. We need to go on we are on a recruitment mission right now to find the best and brightest candidates, some new faces, some young faces. You know, finding more female candidates is a number one priority of ours. as I outlined when I got elected chairman. I said, we're going to partner with Lee Stefanik and go find as many female candidates to run for public office right on down to town and, you know, city and village levels. Because, you know, we're going to take on this, you know, phony narrative that there's a war on women in the Republican Party, because we have a lot of strong women that are out there and interested in running and carrying our party's banner.
But you're saying what you lost in one election, you can gain back. Are you saying you think you could gain the Senate back in 2020?
It's absolutely a possibility.
Huh. Well, okay. You're also losing some senators, as possibly losing them if the outside income ban takes effect. Some of them might leave, like George Amador.
Well, so far
up here,
Bob Ananachi
from Syracuse was only there 6 months. He's leaving to be a judge, so it's, you know, that's another obstacle.
You hate to see any retirements, but you know, when you're in a minority situation, it's more difficult to, you know, keep people and retain them if they see another opportunity to advance their career. Senator Antonacci is going to be a judge if he wins the election, and certainly comes with a 14-year term and a much higher paycheck. Pretty difficult to get someone to do what's not in their own personal best interests.
Okay, 2022, governor's race. I'm thinking it's not too early to talk about this.
It's not too early.
Governor Andrew
Cuomo.
I talk
about it every day.
Governor Andrew Cuomo has already talked about it. He's already said he wants to seek a fourth term.
It's music to my ears.
And why is that?
Because we beat one Cuomo that was reaching for a fourth term, and we're going to beat another one. You know, this governor is a bully. He governs through intimidation. And as I talked about at our press conference earlier today, I mean, we have a culture of pay-to-play that's permeated, you know, his administration for the last decade. And, you know, between that and a leftward leech that this legislature is now forcing on this governor under his watch, you know, issues like driver's licenses for illegal immigrants, you know, issues like geriatric parole, you know, the way that we're seeing our police officers treated in the streets, you have a de-evolution of New York. I mean, you know, there are still people, you know, and the vast silent majority of this state are people that respect the rule of law, respect law enforcement, and you don't see that the people in their government having their back. And I believe that, you know, this governor, you know, thinks he's impervious to shelf life, but, you know, we're ready for a New York comeback, which starts with common sense. So we are on a recruitment mission. We are out there looking actively for the next Republican governor of this state, because the only way to change New York is to change governors.
Do you have any names yet?
I don't recruit candidates through the press,
okay.
So that's going to drive the LCA nuts.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to ever give you a laundry list of people that I'm talking to.
Is Harry Wilson in the
mix?
I think
Harry would be an incredible governor.
What about Carl Paladino? I know you supported him back in 2010. He was he was a Trump figure before Trump.
I think Carl has retired from the business of running for office. He's, you know, his business is booming. He and his son are building quite an empire out there in Western New York. I don't believe he's going to be running for anything anytime soon.
I don't know. Cuomo seems hard to beat, though. I mean, he's got a lot of money. He's faced two challenges from the left of his party, and they never can seem to get above 33% in the primaries. And he doesn't really have any opposition, and he's good at staying governor.
He has trained for this position his whole life. But, you know, eventually everybody runs out of time. You know, there's a shelf life for everyone in public life. I don't believe this is a lifetime appointment for him. And, you know, if he had what it takes, he'd be one of those 17 people on stage running for president right now. But he doesn't have the intestinal fortitude, or it's either that or his skin is so thin he can't handle the scrutiny of being attacked by multiple candidates at the same time. You know, this is not the way to run a government of a state this great. You know, this is one of the least economically free states with a lousy business climate. I mean, Amazon came clean about why they didn't come here, and it had nothing to do with Giannis.
Said it was because of the
bad business.
It was
all about the terrible business climate, because it doesn't make financial sense for them to be here. You know how many other businesses that aren't one of the world's largest retailers think the same? I mean, we're not on any site selector's list of places to go. I mean, I was with a franchisee of restaurants the other day. He says, I've told my partners to just let's wind down everything we're doing in New York. It's just too expensive. It doesn't make sense for us to be there anymore. And that's what's totally lacking. You know, this war on job creators, that you're seeing out of some of these people in the legislature, the AOC wannabes that don't have any understanding of the economy, that just think that you can, pump out more taxpayer dollars or raise prices to whatever, you see fit, and they don't realize it hurts the very people they're trying to help.
How do you think Republican candidates will fare in November of 2020? That is our poll question this week. Let us know at nynow.org. Last time we saw you, our question asked, what kind of a future do you see for public sector unions in New York? And a slight majority said they see a strong one. Larry on Long Island, watching on WLIW, said, I am a 33-year municipal CSEA employee. With Tier 6 and people paying up to 20% of health insurance costs, these jobs aren't what they used to be. Matt, also on the island, disagrees. Their power may have diminished, but they will still be a player in the state for the foreseeable future. And finally, Ronnie in Buffalo, watching on WNED, unions have weakened and this will continue at their own demise because they don't get involved anymore in what made the public sector unions, and that's civil rights. We appreciate everyone taking the time to vote. NYNOW.org is the website to make your voice heard. It's where you can also find all of our past programs along with links to us on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where the handle is at NYNOW_PBS. There's also bonus content from our interview with GOP Chairman Nick Langworthy, where he discusses two important congressional races, one in Buffalo, New York 27, currently represented by Congressman Chris Collins, who was indicted on insider trading last year, and New York 11, a usually reliable red district in Staten Island that was won by Democrat Max Rose in 2018. Again, all at nynow.org. There's also a link to the Capital Confidential blog, also available at timesunion.com. All right, time now to analyze the week's news. And to do so, we welcome in Bill Mahoney of Politico and making her Reporters Roundtable debut, Bernadette Hogan of the New York Post. Thanks for coming in, guys. We want to talk about, first off, Bernadette, you traveled with the governor to Syracuse via Amtrak. What was the deal? Why was he taking the train out there?
Right, so the governor has been to the fair every year since he's been in office, as governor, of course, and he's trying to promote this new line, or at least promotion, that if you take the Amtrak up to the state fair, then you also get free admission to the fair. And then also on board, you can get taste of New York products, et cetera. So he brought a bunch of the reporters, a bunch of his commissioners up on this journey to the state fair. And, reporters got to talk to him, and then we got off and we followed him around, and he had a press conference, et cetera. And of course, they're promoting the joys of the fair and new improvements and whatnot.
Right, calling it transformational, a word he likes to use a lot, right?
Right. I
would argue the topic that dominated the conversation this week in New York is at kitchen tables and in living rooms is the fact that New York is going to have a new license plate, apparently. They came out earlier in the week with the five designs. Three of them have the Statue of Liberty front and center. One has the Mario Cuomo Bridge, which might surprise some people. But that dominated conversation this week. It seemed to come out of left field, did it not?
Yeah, so, he unveiled this, and of course, starting April 1st, 2020, people with license plates 10 years and older will have to get a new plate and have to pay a $25 fee and then also an extra $20 to keep for a vanity plate. And of course, no one wants to pay money. No one wants to replace a license plate if they don't have to. And this is also spurred a couple lawmakers to introduce new bills saying either let's waive that fee or I know one Senator Tedesco, he has a petition that's of course against this.
It's right up Jim Tedesco's alley, wouldn't you say, Bill Mahoney?
Yeah, it's a easy out of the blue gift for some Republicans who are looking for something to do over the summer. It's not the biggest travesty that a state government has ever committed by any means, but you could certainly characterize it as an annoyance and another grab for some change from the state. And Republicans who don't have a lot to do this summer when they're in the minority, they're not prepping for any massive agenda they're going to pass next year. But this is all free cannon fodder for them to be able to go out there and take some shots at Governor Cuomo for something that I don't think there was a big constituency saying it's time to upgrade our license plates right. and charge everybody $25.
Well, and how did the governor receive some of this criticism? I know he argued, at least I heard that he argued that it was easier, the license plates would be easier, more easily read by the cameras on the thruway and et cetera, but I've never heard that as being a big issue before. How is he counteracting the criticism?
Largely what you said, where it's just time to upgrade our license plates for technological reasons. It's kind of odd that we just never heard this discussed until right. they sent out the designs for the license plates on Monday. Mm-hmm. But I guess this will stay around for a while because people will still get to vote on the license plates, and I'm sure we'll have some controversy whichever plate wins. Some people won't be too happy.
Especially if it's the Mario Cuomo Bridge one that wins. Well, that, I think that goes through Labor Day, so we'll see what ends up winning that one. Lost in the license plate drama bill this week was the first meeting of the Public Campaign Financing Commission. It was held down in New York City. You attended. What did we miss?
Not a ton in a general sense. This was largely an organizational meeting where the people who are in charge with coming up with a new campaign finance system for New York, as well as maybe making some other changes to the election law, just had their first meeting. They basically laid out the groundwork for what they'd be doing for the next few months. Didn't make any big decisions, didn't talk about any of the issues in depth. But the one thing that did lead to some fireworks mm-hmm. Was a resolution introduced at the last minute and passed by State Democratic Chairman Jay Jacobs, who's one of the members of this commission. It basically says that whatever they do at the end, they'll vote on as an up or down vote, everything included.
Mm-hmm. How is that received?
It seems like a simple procedural thing, is the way he characterized it. Whatever they're going to do is complex, and if you get rid of one part, then the whole thing might crumble. But the Working Families Party in particular has been the wariest about this commission because there was language slipped into the budget at the last minute that says it also has the power to look at fusion voting, mm-hmm. which is what lets parties like the Working Families Party and Conservative Party cross-endorse candidates who are also running on Democratic or Republican lines. And Jacobs, whose job is to make sure the Democratic Party is as strong as possible, unsurprisingly, is not a fan of fusion voting historically, would not be too upset if the Working Families Party faded to the ether. And so they characterize this basically as a power grab, just a parliamentary maneuver that would let them slip something into the final product that basically ends third parties in New York forever.
Mm-hmm. What's the future of that? Is that going to happen, or what do you think?
We don't really know. We'll have to see. Like, I don't think any of the legislative appointees to the commission are at least publicly gung-ho about changing this. Mm-hmm. But if it gets tied to something else where the governor's people say we're going to hold up the campaign finance reform in general unless you add this onto it, then it's possible it could just be the typical log rolling that we see in the budget or other times in Albany itself where multiple unrelated issues get packaged together. And even if somebody opposes one of them, they'll have to vote for all of them.
And we have 5 meetings coming up right around the state here in the next 2 months.
Yeah, we'll be going from Smithtown to the Birchfield Penny Arts Center out in Buffalo over in September and October to collect testimony from anybody who wants to talk about what they think the public financing campaign finance rules in New York should be.
Decision by the end of the year?
Yeah, they should come out with something by December. That will be a binding report. The legislature could come back at any time and say, we don't like this, we're gonna tinker around with it, but this is kind of like the pay raise commission we've talked about in the past few years, mm-hmm. where whatever they do has the force of law.
This week, the state announced they would sue the Trump administration over the EPA's decision this past April when they gave a certificate of completion to General Electric for their years-long cleanup of PCBs north of the Hudson River between Troy and Fort Edward. This was not completely unexpected.
Right. And Governor Cuomo and State Attorney General Letitia James also threatened this back in, I think, April it mm-hmm. was, and they followed through and they're going to be suing the federal government.
And the DEC has been pushing hard against this, Basil Sagos, the commissioner, since last fall, almost as if they could see this coming.
Yeah, and once again, it's no surprise. We're probably at a point in time right now where we're getting weekly lawsuits of the state of New York against the Trump administration. And this one that potentially makes a major waterway in New York less clean, it's unsurprising that they would pick this fight.
And it's got support from Republicans as well. Mark Molinaro, Dutchess County executive who ran against Cuomo in 2018, supports the lawsuit as well. Last thing before we go, I guess what we can call Fredo Gates. If viewers remember what happened with Chris Cuomo, he went off on someone who called him the name Fredo from the movie Godfather. He got into a little verbal tussle with him. Andrew Cuomo was asked about that this week on a radio interview with WAMC. He ripped a column by our colleague Casey Seiler, which he said compared the Cuomo family unfavorably to the mafia family and Godfather. I personally didn't read it that way. What was his criticism this week?
Right. So this goes back to his father, former Governor Mario Cuomo. But we asked him also at the state fair on Wednesday, you know, what do you personally think of your brother, who is a CNN anchor? Everyone knows the Cuomo name. Mm-hmm. He freaked out, and it caused a lot of stir. However, you know, Governor, what outside of the quote-unquote Italian slur, what do you think? And he said, you know what, my brother reacted in the heat of the moment, and I've been accosted in public as well. He was just defending himself, but I do agree with his apology. He should have acted better.
The story seemed to go away from Chris Cuomo a few days later. It's not really in the news too much now.
Yeah, but it is a decades-old story in some ways. The Cuomo family is the most prominent Italian-American family of politicians in this country's history, arguably. Yeah. And go back to the 80s, Mario Cuomo was denying that the mafia existed, refused to see The Godfather until 2 years before he died in 2015. They are the defenders, and in some ways they're still very sensitive about anything that
even
can be seen as an Italian stereotype.
Right. All right, we'll have to end it right there. Bill Mahoney of Politico, Bernadette Hogan from the New York Post, thanks for coming in.